From news across the world to events in your community, hear about it all on WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
And thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. We do have a fabulous producer. We thank him. He is definitely essential. That's Rob Center. So we're very glad he's on board, and we thank him for taking good care of us, taking care of the archives, and making sure that podcast page is up to date. On the news line with us now, Lee Griffin is calling in. He's a Democratic candidate for U.S. Congress in the 12th District. You will see his name on the June 2nd primary ballot here in Pennsylvania. Good morning, Lee. Thanks for calling in this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, introduce yourself. You're a newcomer to politics, but you're one of these good candidates that pop up from time to time, sort of a common sense citizen who really wants to take action and make positive change. So please introduce yourself to our listeners.
Absolutely. That's quite the introduction you gave me already. Yeah, as you said, I'm not a career politician. I'm just a regular guy. I want to make a difference. And the way I was raised, I believe, you know, if you have the opportunity to make a difference, then you have the obligation to make the effort. And that's what I want to do. I see there's a lot of opportunity in the federal government to have a lot more accountability and transparency to the people that they serve. And I want to restore some of that.
Where are you from? What do you do? Give us some of that demographic info.
Sure. So I grew up in a log house in the woods in northeastern PA. I spent a lot of my youth hunting and fishing in Wyoming and Susquehanna counties. I've got family up there, family where I'm currently based in Northumberland and Union counties. And right as I'm working now in warehousing, so I run warehouses and distribution network for an online retailer.
You will be unopposed in the Pennsylvania spring primary on the Democratic ballot, and then if successful, which it's would be difficult not to be successful in an unopposed primary, but then in the fall, you face the Republican incumbent, Fred Keller. Discuss why you are running and tell us more about your campaign.
So three of the big things that I want to work towards are affordable health care, which is now more important than ever. I also believe that we should get over the debate on climate change and work on fighting that and doing good things for the environment and for the future. And I also want to build a better relationship with the constituency and, again, as I said, accountability and transparency with everyone so that the federal government actually is accountable to who they work for.
Right. Other big issues that you would address in Washington?
Well, one of the things that we've seen for a long time also is the plight of the small farm. You know, small farms have been closing for a long time, and we need to address that in a way where we've seen relief for small businesses in other ways. We need to keep the spotlight and focus on that because that's a big part of our district and a big part of the district's economy.
There have been three phases of bills going through Congress because of the coronavirus. How would you have voted on those?
So I think what we're doing is actually very good, and I'm impressed with the way the federal government is responding. I think we need to do a little bit more, but absolutely I support the relief that's coming through for ordinary citizens, small businesses, and this most recent bill that hopefully passes pretty quickly through the House and gets signed into law. Set aside $9.5 billion for agricultural relief, which is also very important, particularly when, you know, farmers are some of the few people who have to keep working when other people are being told to stay home.
How would you have responded to this crisis differently if you were a U.S. Congress member?
Well, one of the things that's important is preparation in a case like this. We spend a lot of time as a country reacting, and we've had a pandemic response force. We've had preparations laid, and we didn't take proper advantage of those. So that's one of the things you need to do is before the emergency happens, be ready for it. Right? They say in the military, the more you sweat in peace, the less you bleed in war. Right? And preparedness is a big thing. At this point, though, we're starting to do the right things, right? Get medical equipment to the places that they need, get support to the hospitals on the front lines. And it's very important that everybody cooperates with the state governments who've stepped up and taken the lead. Governor Wolf did a great thing in asking folks to stay home and to have close the schools because we need to do is slow the spread of the virus as much as possible.
Compare and contrast yourself with the incumbent.
So, in particular with the coronavirus, I think one of the things that's important is a unified front and its leadership between state, local, and federal governments, and we don't see as much of that as we should be, right? It seems like the federal government and the state governments are not in agreement, and right now, with as much uncertainty as going on with everything, and everybody needs clear direction and clear leadership so that we can all help each other. And so that's something that we can definitely improve on.
Who's dropping the ball in that leadership vacuum?
So I think there's, you know, the administration has done some of that, but also one of the roles of the congressional delegation is to support the state in many different cases, and particularly in crisis and emergency response, right? And so when the governor says, hey, folks, you've got to stay home, we've got to close the schools because we don't want people to get sick, we don't want to overload the healthcare system, what we should be doing is reinforcing that, providing support in the bills that are passed, instead of asking the governor to roll back what he's done.
All right, other compare and contrast with the incumbent.
So I think one of the things that we need to also keep in mind is that the economy is important, right? I'm a business guy myself. I help run a business right now. But that's not the only thing. And so we've got to keep in mind the health, safety, and welfare of everyone who's working. And we can't always put the profitability of companies ahead of the welfare of folks who are on the ground actually working in the economy themselves. I think that's one of the stark differences there. Also, we need to take more decisive action on climate change, which I think is something that is not talked about enough. And certainly at this point, we've got other issues to talk about. But as we get the virus under control, we need to focus on this because it's not going away.
All right. If elected, you may get a chance to cast a vote that relates to abortion. What's your view on that?
So my view is that I am not personally qualified to make the decision because I'm not a woman. This is a woman's choice, and I follow the lead of women on this. And if there's a decision to be made, it should be made by the people who are directly affected.
Well, we make a lot of laws that don't directly affect us. I mean, I'm not a child, but I'm opposed to child abuse. What is your view on whether a woman should have the opportunity to choose?
I believe that she should.
What about any changes in gun laws that we should enact?
Well, I'm a responsible law-abiding gun owner myself. Like I said, I grew up hunting and fishing. And so I think what we do need is a clear review of what we have as far as the laws in place, make sure we're enforcing them. And it may be necessary to make some common sense changes to gun laws. But what I don't think is very healthy right now in the debate is folks aren't listening to each other. Right, and what we need to do is actually say, what is it? What's the objective that we're trying to achieve in that case? And the objective is not we want to limit people's ability to have firearms. We want to limit people getting hurt and people getting shot in public places. And I think there are ways to do that that doesn't infringe on people's rights.
Such as?
Well, we have licensing for cars, and that might make sense for firearms, and it might not. There's a lot that goes into this, and I think wholesale saying let's restrict purchase and sale in a large, wide, sweeping way is not maybe going to achieve the goals that we want. But there are a lot of places where people can get around the laws that we have, and I think the first step is closing those loopholes.
Okay, other changes. So they call it the gun show loophole, which is a complete misnomer. But so all gun sales would have to go through a transaction background check? Is that, I mean, even private sales, or if you handed a gun down to a family member or up to a family member?
Yeah, so that's something that happens. I think I've had guns transferred to me from family members, and it's actually been transferred to me under my name. And so that's something that we have a process for. And actually, Pennsylvania has done a pretty good job of doing this. And I think they can,
not for rifles or shotguns.
That's true. And I think in a lot of cases, there's state-by-state work that can be done. But I don't think that having no record of firearms is necessarily the best way to do it. And again, there's a lot of existing ownership that happens. And we need to take that into account.
All right. Some other topics briefly here. Raising the minimum wage, what's your view on that? How high, I guess I would ask?
Yeah, so definitely raising the minimum wage is a great thing. I think one of the things that's difficult with the minimum wage is you have local economies, right? So if you're going to raise the minimum wage to, I think, $15 is one of the popular figures now, that means something very different in our district than it does in, say, Philadelphia or Pittsburgh. And so doing it whole, you know, all the way across the board is not necessarily the best thing. I think if we tie it to some economic factor, like living wage that MIT does, that would be a great way to do it, because then it's more true to the local economy that you're in.
All right. Well, you got a moment left. Anything else you would like to add?
Well, I appreciate being on. Thank you. I just wanted to share, I'm on Facebook, Lee Griffin for Congress, and you can also find me at LeeGriffinForCongress.com. And I think the most important thing that I want folks to know right now is actually just, you know, please keep your distance from everyone. If you can stay indoors, do that, and please wash your hands often.
All right. Well, sound advice. Okay. Thank you so much, Lee Griffin. Thank you so much for checking in today. What's the website address for folks to look you up?
It's LeeGriffinForCongress.com, just all written out.
All right. Sounds fabulous. Thank you so much. Thank you, Lee. Thank you for calling in today.
Thanks for having me, sir.
Do appreciate that. That interview was scheduled long before we had a pandemic, but as you can tell, these are timely issues, particularly related to leadership and COVID-19. Lee Griffin, Democratic candidate for U.S. Congress, last name spelled G-R-I-F-F-I-N, running for Congress in the 12th District, and on the Democratic ticket, you'll see his name in Pennsylvania's June 2nd primary.